today. It's just me and you folks, and here we go. I want to talk about the Trump speech last week, the election speech. You know, I listen to right-wing radio, so you don't have to. And last week, my jaw dropped when one of the two talking heads that have succeeded Rush Limbaugh, and they've been there for about 3 years now, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. Buck Sexton specifically raised, in response to Trump's speech on the election, raised exactly the same questions I have raised and will continue to raise. And now, this is fascinating to me because this says volumes about where things might be heading. But before we dig into that, and dig into it we shall, I want to play this clip from a PBS interview with Ty Cobb. Okay, so who's Ty Cobb? Not a baseball player. He's an attorney who served as the special counsel during Trump's first administration back in 2016. So Cobb's got a history with Trump. He's presumably no friend of the Democratic Party. Here's what he had to say in response to a question about Trump's July 16 speech on the security of America's elections.
Well, I think tonight's speech is intended to add the predicate that he needs to declare an emergency at or about the time of the elections. As you know, Steve Bannon and Todd Blanche have suggested that there will be ICE agents at the polls. I think that that's a virtual certainty. Whether that will include the National Guard or not, we don't know. But anything to intimidate minority voters, particularly immigrant voters, and also I think anything that allows them to, you know, try to seize voting machines as Trump wanted to do in 2020, but Bill Barr explained to him there was just no basis for it. I think you will see him doing everything he can to try to prevent the peaceful transfer of power, the election of Democrats, and do whatever he can to remain in power and to keep his cronies in powers so that he can continue doing what he thinks he's allowed to do as president, which is anything he wants.
Okay, that's Ty Cobb on PBS, Public Broadcasting Services. And he's an attorney who used to work with Donald Trump during his first administration. And he's basically saying, you know, this election speech last week is not about the 2020 election. It's about preparing America for the inevitable involvement of military and police force to make sure the election goes President Trump's way. And again, all the polling, you know, as we've said on the show before, all the polling, all the numbers, even the most recent special elections, make it really clear that this is not going to be a good fall election for the president's party. And, you know, that's always the case, right? Whoever is in the White House, Democrat or Republican, the midterm election always goes against that president's party. That's what we need to be thinking about. Trump's election speech, not about 2020, is about preparing us for what he's going to try to do this fall in 2026. And I was interested, fascinated, in fact, to see that my two, the two talking heads on the right that I listen to most frequently, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. Buck Sexton specifically challenging Trump to provide specific data on the allegations he is making. I'm going to play you three separate clips. We're going to start with the one where Buck Sexton questions Trump's claim that China paid U.S. journalists to write bad stuff about Trump leading up to the 2020 election. Here's that clip.
Issue of journalists getting paid,
yeah,
to write stories, getting paid by China to write stories. Okay, who? I want to know who. If you're telling me that there are journalists that received money in order to write negative stories about the... Now, you could say whether that's legal or not. I think it is probably legal, but the point is, all right, if you have this information, let's know this information.
So again, fascinating to me that that question is coming from somebody who's about as far on the political right as they can be. This is Rush Limbaugh's successor, Buck Sexton, saying, okay, you say that Chinese... the Chinese government has been paying U.S. journalists. Specifics, please. Well, the reason Trump can't give specifics is because there have been multiple investigations, and they've all confirmed that the Chinese government is not doing this. They've also confirmed that the Chinese government does spend a heck of a lot of money on disinformation campaigns. And so does Russia, by the way, and so do we. I don't know, maybe Moldova does as well, who knows? Anyway, researchers at Harvard University, you know, found that the Chinese government turns out about 500,000 social media posts each year, 500,000 social media posts each year, again, trying to disrupt American public opinion. And most of them are generated by government employees. In other words, they're being paid. People are being paid to put out this material, these 500,000, you know, posts. I was fascinated to learn that there are possibly as many as 2 million people on China's payroll doing this. But the thing is, there's no evidence that a single one of them is a U.S. journalist. Okay? So I fact-checked this a bit further. It is blatantly false. There's no evidence to support the claim that China bribed U.S. journalists to publish negative stories about him in 2020. Again, even independent investigations, other media reports, even the U.S. election security agencies, none of them have found a single incident of an American reporter you can name who's been paid by the Chinese government. And as Buck Sexton points out, okay, it's probably not illegal. It's certainly immoral. It's certainly unpatriotic. But it's not happening. That's the bottom line. And I mean, does China really need to hire U.S. journalists? I'm sure it can pay its own, you know, slave laborers a lot less to do what they're doing from China. All what, maybe 2 million of them. So, you know, again, here's a quote from Trump during that speech. Quote, "Our elections were left vulnerable to being rigged and stolen, and the trust of the American people was lost." And he provided no evidence. Not one example of how a single vote was affected by the alleged U.S. reporters that have been paid by China. You know, and again, to remind you, as Ty Cobb said, what we just heard a little while ago, the former White House attorney for Donald Trump, all this is about preparing to take over the November election. You know, another Trump claim in that speech was, quote, "China carried out what is believed to be the largest compromise of election data in history." Again, no evidence. And kudos to Buck Sexton, again, Rush Limbaugh's successor, for calling it out. He said, where's the proof? So there's an entity called the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency in cooperation with the FBI. They put out a bulletin back in 2020 that found no information suggesting any cyber attack on U.S. election infrastructure. Again, that's from them. That's from CBS News. CBS News, actually, I'm not a fan of CBS anymore now that they're basically owned by a buddy of Donald Trump's, but that's from them. Also, again, Georgia and Pennsylvania, they conducted their own audits of the 2024 general election and confirmed the accuracy of election results. I'm going to play another clip from Buck. And this one is not about China. This is about Trump's claim about how many people are registered to vote illegally and how many dead people are registered to vote.
On the issue of the people who are illegals who are registered to vote, or, you know, foreigners basically who are registered to vote, are they voting? If they are voting, tell us about the voting. Yeah. If they are voting, why can't we catch them voting? I mean, so this is the thing. He's laid out this information, and a lot of it is, oh my gosh, there are vulnerabilities. Okay, are the vulnerabilities being exploited, though, is the next step. And I need to know if they have that information or not, because that's obviously the most critical thing is whether they're actually acting on this, right? It's one thing to say a lot of people could be voting illegally. Are they voting illegally?
Great question, Buck. Are they voting illegally? I mean, I'm going to give you the answer. No, because if they were, Trump and his team would have cited examples. And I want to get back to that because we don't even, the examples are all against that premise. I want to play you one more clip from Sexton. This is, again, kind of tying those two themes together.
Is anybody going to jail over anything he said last night? Is one single person going to be prosecuted for all of the stuff that he talked about last night? I would say, no, I don't think so. And if that's the case, I would want to know why.
Me and Buck Sexton. I mean, I normally don't agree with these guys. And I wonder what Clay Travis is thinking, because he's not jumping on the same bandwagon. Buck does admit later in the program that he's probably just ruined any chance of getting another invitation to the White House. I also wonder whether he's going to run into problems with his employer, because, again, the corporations that own commercial radio are all in lockstep with President Trump. So, wow, Buck calling this out is significant. We'll see where it goes. I want to dig into this stuff a little bit more. You know, Trump also talked about voting machines, calling them vulnerable and easily compromised. And even people within our own government knew that. So again, CBS, one of the big networks that are on board with Trump, thanks to Paramount and Ellison. CBS says, quote, "This claim by Trump likely refers to a document declassified by the government that mentions voting machines and Venezuela. The intelligence community found that Venezuela was trying to operationalize a hypothetical vulnerability in a voting system used in that country. That system is not used in the U.S. And Smartmatic, this is a company that makes the Venezuelan machine, is not involved in any voting machines in the U.S. with the exception of Los Angeles County. So in other words, you know, the voting machines being, quote, vulnerable and easily compromised, it's not supported by evidence. Jeff Hale, he's with the Center for Democracy and Technology, writes, "Security researchers do find real weaknesses embedded in the code and operations of U.S. voting systems, just like they do with power grids, banks, telecommunications, all of which share the same critical infrastructure designation as elections. Finding a flaw and fixing it is a sign of a mature system, not a sign it's broken." And again, you know, we're trying to fix these things. Back to Trump's claim about illegal voters, dead voters, and Buck Sexton's challenge. Okay, show me one. Show me one example of somebody voted illegally, of a dead person voting. If this is happening, somebody is probably going to jail. Who's that? When is that going to happen? What's the charge? So again, Trump claimed, and I'll quote, "Hundreds of thousands of non-citizens and dead people are listed and active on the voter rolls." So yeah, okay, that's Trump. Election experts, what they say is votes cast on behalf of dead people are extremely rare and the numbers are unlikely to affect the outcome of an election. Okay, so for example, in North Carolina, the State Board of Elections there announced early this year, in April, I believe, that it had identified 34,000 deceased individuals on its voter rolls. But the board also said that this does, quote, "does not necessarily indicate that illegal votes were cast in their names." And that's the Sexton's point. Okay, you got all these dead voters. How many of them are actually voting? So, again, from the Center for Election Innovation and Research, the phenomenon of non-citizens voting in the U.S. is a rare occurrence and unlikely to change the outcome of an election. Yeah, so that agency, that entity, the Center for Election Innovation Research, concluded that non-citizens voting in U.S. elections arise from misunderstandings, mischaracterizations, or outright fabrications. And once an investigation by an individual state secretary of state is concluded, quote, "the number of alleged instances falls drastically." Okay, so here in Iowa, we have a Republican Secretary of State, and he's pretty much on board with the Republican Party and Trump. He published in March of last year, the state had estimated that there were 2,186 non-citizens registered to vote. But then, after a statewide audit, the number dropped to 277 confirmed non-citizens. So his original estimate of 2,100 was really only 277. And of those 277, you want to guess how many voted in 2024? 35. And again, you know, back to the Center for Election Innovation, probably because of misunderstandings, mischaracterizations, or who knows what. So, you know, Trump also took on mail-in ballots in his speech, right? Even though he's voted by mail not that long ago, when he was in town, he still voted by mail. But he's claimed that mail-in ballots are inherently corrupt. Again, there's no evidence of widespread mail-in ballot fraud or any kind of corruption at all in states where they're used. So another entity, the Brookings Institute, did a little research here and found that, quote, an average total mail voting fraud percentage across the 2016, 18, 2020, and 22 general elections was only 0.00043%. Let me say that number again. Mail-in voting fraud across the last four elections, presidential and midterm, 0.00043%. So how much is that? Well, that's about four instances of voter fraud, mail-in voter fraud, for every 10 million votes. I mean, that's not even a rounding error. That's so small. We don't have a problem here. We don't have a problem. Again, we should always be paying attention. And I'm, you know, I'm the first to admit that there will be people on both sides of the political aisle who try to do things that are nefarious, underhanded, fraudulent. I'm thinking of the 2016 election and Bernie Sanders. I'm thinking of my very first election in 1992. No fraud in my race, which I won really handily. But there was fraud in another race that was very close. And I've talked about that before. I'm not going to get into that one today. I got to play one more clip from you, though. After Clay and Buck discussed the Trump election speech, later in that program, they had Stephen Miller on. Again, Stephen Miller, right-hand man, probably the brains behind Trump's agenda. They had him. This is actually not on Clay and Buck show. This clip is from somewhere else. It's kind of all over the place. But it's what he has to say about, quote, left-wing terrorism. I want to play that for you. It's very disturbing.
We have taken the necessary and essential action of formally recognizing left-wing violence as a form of political terrorism that is a direct threat to our national security and the survival of our Republican form of government. That directs, for the first time in American history, all of our law enforcement and intelligence agencies to work together to disrupt, identify, defund, debank, arrest, and prosecute these political terrorists that are operating in our country. It's very important to understand that left-wing political terrorism seeks as its ultimate end the overthrow of our system and form of government. Left-wing terrorism always ends in bloodshed, misery, and suffering. It only can travel in one direction. There's no point at which the left-wing terrorist is satisfied with his gains and ceases progressing. Inevitably, left to run its course, it always becomes a gulag. It always becomes the mass imprisonment of political enemies, the stripping of their rights and freedoms, inflicting immense pain, humiliation, suffering. It's not a coincidence that when you look at these violent Antifa demonstrations, you see any photograph of those who were assembled. To be blunt, not one of the people that is demonstrating looks like a normal person. Not one looks normal. They're all deformed in some way in their appearance, in their dress, in their mannerism.
Wow, that's the guy who's basically in charge of the White House and in charge of domestic policy and who knows what kind of influence he has on foreign policy. I he's going to enter this conversation later when we talk about climate change too. But how frightening is that? And terrorism? Left-wing terrorism? What about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 4 years ago? I mean, come on. Gulag, well, okay, what about deportation camps? Some of these are horrible places. And, you know, so I'm hoping that reasonable people can hear what Steve Miller has to say and think, this guy is dangerous. If this guy is not a dyed-in-the-wool fascist, I don't even know what fascist means anymore. I mean, That speech could have been straight out of Goebbels or someone in Adolf Hitler's regime. The people who are involved with the left-wing terrorist protests, they're weird. They're not normal. They're clearly wrong. What they have tattoos. They have a body piercing. They have a different color hair. I don't know what he means by that. It doesn't matter what he means, because what he's doing is trying to poison the minds of enough Americans to accept that there is truth in what he's saying, that there is such a thing as left-wing terrorism. Watch out with this guy, folks. And if you voted for Trump, I'd really like to know how you feel about what Stephen Miller just said. I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. Last week, I had Rick Stewart on this program. He's a Libertarian candidate for Congress here in Iowa. And the Republican Party in Iowa and nationally worked to get three Libertarians thrown off the ballot here in Iowa because they're afraid that Libertarians are going to take votes from Republicans. So I had Rick on to talk about that. He's the one of the three that did not get bounced. And one thing that happened in his case was the U.S. Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon called for an investigation into RFK Jr. because RFK Jr. called both Stewart and one of the other candidates and encouraged them to get off the ballot. And even said to one of them, so, hey, get off the ballot. I'll be your advocate. I'll help you get involved with this administration. To Rick's credit, he said, no way. I'm not going to be bullied. And to Wyden's, credit, he's filing a complaint about this, accusing Kennedy of violating what's called the Hatch Act. That's a 1939 law, goes way back, that limits the type of political activities that federal officials can do, federal employees can do. So I don't know. I'm actually surprised that Wyden's lawsuit doesn't get into the fact that Kennedy offered Stewart something valuable in exchange for dropping out. That happened to me, folks, back in 2008, when I challenged Leonard Boswell, a Democrat, Democratic congressman. One of his aides came to me and said, hey, get out, and we'll give you a job with our staff, $80,000 a year job. I said no. And when I went public with that information, Boswell sued me. And then, of course, because it was a baseless lawsuit, he withdrew it. But yeah, this stuff happens. This stuff happens. And kudos to Wyden for challenging it. I hope he actually focuses on the even more egregious offense, in my opinion, of the benefit being offered to Rick Stewart if he should comply with the White House's request. Right, one more political thing to talk about, the Maine Senate seat. Let me play you a clip about that.
At this point, you hadn't vetted Graham Plattner. You hadn't done a full scrub of who he is. How did you go about vetting him? And why did you?
We paid a nice firm a whole chunk of money and got some stuff back. Some of what you've seen on the news we got back. Other stuff we didn't.
Did the vetting process turn up the tattoo that became so controversial?
No.
The Reddit posts, did that turn up in the vetting process?
The firm sent us a thing and it had some of the posts, but it didn't have all of them.
And what did you think about that? How did you think your way through the fact that he had posted these things on social media?
I said none of this will or should stop him from becoming a U.S. senator.
And what was your thinking there? Agree.
I think if what the voters wanted were people who were grown in vats and had never done or said anything that they might regret their entire lives, we'd have a very different country. Part of our thesis here is that people do not want their candidates grown in vats. They want people who are real human beings. And they want people who do not look and sound like the background people who've been leading this country off a cliff for the last century.
Okay, so maybe that was also painful to listen to for different reasons. That was Dan Moroff. I just got to know who Dan Moroff was last year, maybe the year before. He recruited Dan Osborne, U.S. Senate candidate in Nebraska. who did fairly well, lost, but did fairly well. And I don't know where else Moroff has been active, but I know he was active in Iowa. He recruited a guy named Nathan Sage. And pretty much everybody I know who's been involved with politics in Iowa thought, "What? Who is this guy coming in and selecting a Senate candidate?" I mean, we hate it when Chuck Schumer does that, and he's done that, and they usually lose. Actually, they almost always lose. They usually win the nomination because of all the money Schumer's war machine throws at them, and then they lose gloriously in the general election, whether it's U.S. Senate, U.S. House. So here's another guy. This guy is from the other spectrum, other side of the political spectrum within the Democratic Party. He's a self-described socialist. Interestingly, he's also the grandson of the Toys R Us people. I assume that comes with a lot of money. I assume that's why when Nathan Sage kind of came from nowhere and was announced as a candidate for U.S. Senate here in Iowa, he had like $800,000 all of a sudden. And then he later dropped out. He dropped out because he was getting zero traction. So this is the guy, Dan Moroff, who recruited Graham Plattner in Maine. And you heard the interview. I mean, I can't believe that Moroff agreed to do that interview because it is so embarrassing. I mean, first of all, if you've got that much vocal fry going on and it sounds like you're still, you know, maybe still struggling to gain your adult voice, maybe you shouldn't be doing interviews. And maybe that's a little bit bigoted on my part, but it was embarrassing to hear him talk. And again, content, sure, as well. Okay, we didn't catch the tattoo. We didn't catch the Reddit post. We dropped all this money. We got some stuff back. We didn't get a lot back. Basically, they did an incredibly poor job at vetting this candidate. And so should there be no doubt that the wheels fell off the Plattner campaign? It's incredible to me. Bottom line is, I don't care whether you're Chuck Schumer with the corporate wing of the Democratic Party or you're with the DSA wing of the Democratic Party, stay out of individual states' political business. You have no reason to be involved with recruiting candidates, with throwing money at them. Just stay away. Let voters in those particular districts figure out who they want to run and figure out who they want to support.